Hey everybody, welcome to this week's episode of the Liberty Squadron Podcast. My name's Andrew Lewinsky, and I am joined today with Marshall Staggs.
Hello.
Rob Kaiser.
Hello.
And Jonathan Lee.
Hello everyone.
Alright guys, we got some news. Second edition dropped. Woo! What?
Alright. Alright. I've had it for a month, so.
Oh, right. Someone special.
Yeah, but I haven't been able to play with anybody because...
Fair.
So it's kind of like, yay, it's finally out, so I can actually play with people.
So yeah, we've all got it. We've got our reps in. We've probably been grinding out as much as we possibly can.
Yeah, I think we're the best on the East Coast by now.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, I've got three games in. Yeah, I think I'm good.
Right. There's a reason they call it East Coast, Beast Coast.
That's true.
What is it, the worst coast over there on the West? Sorry, Minox.
I don't even think about that.
It's fine. Yeah, it's too far away.
All their crazy dragon files and all that stuff.
I actually haven't finished unpacking all my stuff yet.
Ah, Jonathan. With that being said, we've got a lot of people asking us questions. We've got a lot of different rules that we're not sure about. Well, we've been studying the rules immensely, but a lot of people out there are still a little hazy on everything. And first thing you probably want to do is go over the rules reference completely.
I know. Oh, just people, read it. It's just all in read there. It.
Just if you have a question, read it. If look for keywords like may and can and stuff like that. If it doesn't say anything like that, then you're probably forced to do something. Don't try bending the rules or anything along those lines unless it specifically says so. But we did have a lot of questions come in, and we're going to go over everything that we can for the moment.
Yeah, there is weird stuff. Like, the rules reference is not perfect. I mean, first thing, read the rules reference. And second thing, I guess, listen to what we're about to tell you.
Yeah, and read better.
Listen good.
Read the card, RTC. You would not believe how many times people come on to me and ask me a question, and I'll just be like, read the card, what does it say? And I'm like, oh. So that is the first thing. Then read the rules reference and so on.
That's also a good answer for me to give because I still don't know what anything does. So
right. And
when I need to tell people to read the cards because I don't know what they say.
Then after you do all that, we are still dealing with Fantasy Flight games and things are still pretty unclear. So we're going to try our best to go over this things with this episode and make the best clarifications that we can. So yesterday, anyone that is going to Coruscant, they got an email saying with a couple questions and answers. First one being, can ships that only use turret arcs or 180 degree arcs attacks use effects that require the ship to perform a front facing arc attack? An example, fearless or outmaneuver. Their answer is no. Note the difference between the requirement of fearless, and that says while you perform a front facing arc attack, primary attack, and punishing one, while you perform a primary attack, if the defender is in your front-facing arc. A front-facing arc attack uses the front-facing arc icon above the attack value as shown on its ship card. This is different from an attack that is performed against a ship in its front-facing arc. So that itself is pretty confusing, and it drew a huge conversation on our South Jersey Philadelphia X-Wing page that everyone's kind of fighting about. So with that being said, Marshall, do you want to take a little bit on this?
What this clarification breaks, it doesn't break anything. What it boils down to is that the front-facing arc is a very specific thing. It's if it uses it, it will have that symbol. And a turret arc, and I think it's particularly relevant with the turret arcs, and we're going to talk about turret arcs a little later because this folds into other things. But the turret arc, even if it's facing forward and it's in your front arc, is a separate thing. And similarly, if you're in your side arcs, the little side triangles of the 180, even though you may be in I guess if you're in the full 180, even if you are technically firing out of the little that is marked as, as it would be a forward arc, it does not count. It's a different thing. And now I don't think there are any attacks as of right now that fire out of the complete 180 front arc. I may be wrong about that.
Wookiees do, don't they?
Oh, I'm like, is there... Oh, yeah, maybe. Oh, right, so that is built into the attack profile of the ship. Okay, yeah. I guess, so YV666s can't use Fearless at all.
Which, you would think that, like, even if the YV had something in its arc, front arc, and not in the side arcs, and vice versa, it would still be able to trigger Fearless, but this precedent basically says, no, it can't, because it has a 180-degree arc.
Now, yeah, they don't have... I'm double-checking on the Wikipedia right now to make sure that it's... Yeah, it's weapon profile, it has a 3-die 180 arc, so it does not have a traditional front arc. For any rules purposes at all.
I think how I describe the difference is when you have that little arc symbol, if it just shows the symbol, it means just the arc. But if it shows that arc symbol and then it says attack, then it means you need to have that on your card.
Yes.
So if Fearless was worded, while you perform an attack against a target in your front arc, that would be different than a YV666 could do it, but it says, while you perform a front arc attack.
Yeah.
So let's go into the next one. It says, when a ship with its turret arc indicator pointing at its front performs a front attack, has it also attacked from that turret arc? So their answer is no. For example, if a ship equipped with a veteran turret gunner performs a primary front attack or arc attack, it could use a veteran turret gunner's ability to perform a turret arc attack, even if the turret arc indicator is pointing at its front arc. You could basically double tap if you, let's say, have a Y-wing with the veteran turret gunner and you fire out of its front arc with your primary, then you could then double tap with the veteran turret gunner. Pretty straightforward, but...
Yeah, it's that thing of the turret arc being a completely separate entity as far as the rules are concerned.
So that one's pretty straightforward. Next we go to, while locking, can a player not choose an object? Their answer, well... It says maybe, but the answer is clearly no. It says, while locking, a player must choose another object at range 0 to 3. So when it says, like, another, I would imagine maybe if they have something locked already and there's nothing else at range 0 to 3, that might be the only time that's why it might be a maybe. It says, thus acquiring a lock only fails if there are no other objects at range 0 to 3. Yeah, it's pretty much no. I don't know why they said maybe.
I mean, if you are in the corner of the board and seismic charges have destroyed all the rocks on the table, and your opponent is on the complete other side of the board, there may be a scenario in which there's nothing you can target lock.
Yeah.
But that's never going to, I mean, never say never. I mean, it is possible, but it's not in a practical scenario. It's not going to happen.
Yeah. In the new rules reference, it says in the FAQ section, it says, while locking, can a player choose not to choose an object? And it says yes, but only if there's no valid objects to select. So if you blow up all the obstacles with seismics and there's no one else, no enemy near you or friendly ships,
you blow them all up. Two turns on the other side of the board.
But I think it was a clarification that you can't use composure with a E-wing, so you can't do a boost and then target lock and not select something and try to trigger composure. It was just something to avoid that. Mm-hmm. Next we got, when the Nashta Pup deploys, does it gain charges equal to the charge limit from the ship card with the Hound's Tooth? No, when the Nashta Pup deploys via emergency deployment, it gains the number of active and inactive charges that the ship with the Hound's Tooth had before it was destroyed. Stop trying to break the game.
Yeah.
You're not going to...
You don't get to Pac-Man two more times.
Yes. Exactly. That was the only reason they had to put that in. And then, if a ship equipped with Boba Fett cannot be placed at range 0 of an obstacle and beyond range 3 of an enemy ship, what happens? That ship instead defaults at being placed range 1 of its player's board edge. So if you have Boba and you really want to be a dick and just plop yours right in the middle of the board so no one else can deploy, the other Boba can't deploy, then sure. I don't know if I'd really want my Boba in the middle of the board to begin with. That doesn't sound very tactical.
Yeah, I think the idea was that you could somehow make it impossible for your opponent to place their ship, and then that ship would just be destroyed.
Yeah.
Or something. Yeah. But that's obviously not how it was intended.
Anyone going to Coruscant, these are the rulings. So if you had any questions about them, especially with the boba, because that's going to be a big thing. There you go.
I mean, could you put Iman Azamim with a seismic charge with Boba Fett crew and then throw out with like a three bank and then blow up a rock near your opponents and all damage them on the first turn?
Good.
Yeah, I don't see that. That sounds fun.
You could even put, what is it, Bombardier? That
yeah.
Two straight at the back. So yeah.
Four bank. Or I'm sorry, four hard.
Alright, so, yeah. Alright, so let's, Cavil. Cavil, we have, while you perform a non-front arc attack, roll one additional die. Now, this brought up a lot of conversation in our group that if you were to pair this with Dorsal Turret and have Dorsal Turret facing front, does this trigger Cavil in rolling a additional die? Prior to the fact that we received yesterday, I would have said absolutely not. The Dorsal Turret only is the two dice unless it's at range one, then it's three dice. But after they gave us this fact, I believe that it's the other way around, because now on the Dorsal Turret card, it says that it's a turret arc, and with the Fearless precedent and everything like that, I feel that it should, if you have that Dorsal Turret facing forward, it should roll that one additional attack die.
Yeah, it's a non-primary attack. It is a turret attack, and I guess for the purpose of Cavil's ability, it's irrelevant which direction it's facing. So if you're Cavil and you're shooting with a turret, his ability always triggers.
I agree.
So every turret that's equipped to him rolls an additional attack die whenever it shoots.
That makes sense.
Now, he did.
I don't agree with it, but that's, I mean, it's dumb. But
it's something that would have to be further fact. I think they'll probably eventually rule that it is only if they are in the front arc. But then that, you know, that could be something like, you know, well, they could be in the side arc and the front arc at the same time. So, but at the moment, I would have to agree that Dorsal Turret would trigger through the front arc.
Yeah.
If it is facing forward. Again, I know some people aren't agreeing with that. We are not judges, so don't, you know, send us a bunch of hate mail if you don't agree with us. This is just a matter of opinion. I am
judging everyone who disagrees with me.
There you go.
It makes Cavil interesting. It makes him, I mean, not that that was the point of them making that ruling, was to make Cavil better, but I think as a side effect, it does make Cavil a lot more interesting. And I don't agree with the logic behind the ruling necessarily, that you can fire out of your front arc and measure, you know, range and stuff, and whether or not something is in arc using your front firing arc, but have it not be a front arc attack. But it's not your primary, so I guess that's what they're, I guess that's it. So it's not your primary, so it don't worry about what the printed firing arc on the card is, on the pilot card. So that's, if that's the way they're going to do it, as long as they do it consistently, it's weird, but I guess I don't care.
Right, and the other thing that we kind of brought up just in our chat was that, like, torpedoes specifically have on their card that front firing arc. Torpedoes, I would say, absolutely does not trigger the Cavil's ability. But with everything that they were kind of saying with the Fearless and the other,
I would say it does.
Well, okay, so if you pull up a torpedo on, like, a torpedo card, it specifically has that front arc attack.
Right. But so I guess maybe I need to back up.
Oh.
When it says on Cavil, while you perform a non-front arc attack, which we're saying is his normal two attack die printed value.
Correct.
Well, you're still not performing that two dice attack. You're performing a torpedo, which is different from that, which is
But the torpedo uses that symbol. You're looking for the symbol.
Yeah.
What I'd say is it says non-front arc attack, not non-front arc primary attack. Because sometimes, like in Fearless, it says primary attack.
Right.
Right.
A non-front arc attack would include specials, special weapons. I also first thought that torpedoes might work, but
that makes sense now without the primary. Yep. Okay.
Let's move on. So, if you don't agree with us, that's fine. Hopefully, we have a fact. You know, it's good that we bring up these issues now, and then hopefully FFG can address them as soon as possible, because it doesn't look good.
I almost kind of wish that they had just not used the word primary. Yeah. That they had just completely, that they had exclusively used symbols. I think that would, but anyway, I mean, it's too late now.
Yeah, I mean,
I think that might have made things easier.
So I was thinking about this. So if, like, for an instance, like, while you perform a non, and then the symbol is that front arc attack, roll one additional attack die. You could have like made it, so you have a circle, right? Like a pie circle, essentially, that, you know, so if it's a front arc, that triangle at the top is shaded in. If it's a rear arc for like the fire spray, the back one is shaded in. And then you have the side ones and then a half, all that. They did not do a full like filled in circle, which I think would have been a perfect way to indicate a 360 like turret as far as like being able to move, or maybe I'm thinking wrong, but they could have probably used like an entirely full circle to indicate like while you perform a, you know, a anywhere attack, right? Like on Cavil.
Yeah.
Like you get one additional attack die. So you just have a full black circle, meaning any of the arcs get.
Well, I mean, could they have just, I know what people are saying, but to avoid all of this, do you think they could have just said, while you perform a turret attack, Cavil rolls an additional die? Probably would have been the smarter thing to do if that's the way this was supposed to work.
Can it work on bullseye attacks? Like if at some point down the line they drop a torpedo that fires out of your bullseye arc, now he can use it on that as well. Now his ability triggers off the bullseye attack.
Yeah, or if there's like a backward firing torpedo or a sideways firing torpedo or any.
I mean, not that's like, but it leaves that open. Not that anything like that is ever going to happen. But
yeah, either that or we're looking at X-Wing 3.0 by Gen Con next year.
Yeah. Cavil is so broken they have to reboot the
game. Well, it's just like guys, we really screwed up with this, like, is this arc icon. We gotta reset. Let's try it again.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they could have color coded. They could have used a different color, maybe. Like red is like the attack, and then if just to indicate it's the arc, it could be black.
Sure. Yeah.
Let's move on. We spent enough time on this. Because I know people are going to be listening to this and just raging out and be like, no, that's not how it works. But all right, Marshall, you brought this up the other night with ionized ships.
Yeah, so this, I think we talked about this last episode, and it's also the thing I think that I've been most asked about is that, that's right. We talked about it when we were talking about the FFG panel at Nova. Yeah, so a lot of people have been asking that me and other people, like the question has been coming up, can you link an action off the focus that you are locked into after you perform the ion one forward? And my understanding, which I firmly stand by and will argue, is that you can only do the focus. You can't link to action because it says you may only perform focus actions.
Yes.
And the rules reference, this is a weird gap in the rules reference. Like the rules reference doesn't talk about linked actions in this context, either in the ion section or in the linked action section.
Well, I think it does. Hold on. Let me pull up ion. It does.
Well, it says it can only perform the focus action.
Right. So if you're only performing the focus action, I would believe that you can only, during the perform action step, this ship can only perform the focus action. Now, I believe that you can't link that into anything else because something like advanced sensors, it says you can only perform one action during your activation.
Right. And then people were, the counter argument that people were using is that, well, if I can do a barrel roll with Sabine and then link it into a red evade, like, how is that different? And my response to that would be, well,
there are more than one action.
It doesn't say you can't do it. Whereas the entry for ion specifically says that you cannot do that, that you can only do focuses. So that's my argument and my counter argument. And I feel like I understand why people are confused by it, but I haven't heard.
Now,
people were trying to convince me that they can, like, boost off a focus after they were ion.
Nope. Just to play devil's advocate, All right, so it says during the perform action step, which is after you move, you can be coordinated still, and which doesn't make sense. You would think that you wouldn't be able to do anything until there are no ion tokens on your ship because you remove them after your activation, but
that's not your perform action.
Exactly. So you're being coordinated outside of your perform action step. So,
yeah, so it's fine.
Yeah, you can absolutely do actions then, and you can link actions off of that coordinate. But if it is your perform action step after you move, you can absolutely not do anything except for focus actions.
Yeah, which that's also it, period. Thematically makes absolutely no sense, but I mean, whatever.
I mean, thematically,
I
yeah.
I don't know what the coordinate action is thematically supposed to represent, so, like, whatever, but it's
them yelling over the intercom, hey, do a barrel roll.
Yeah, I don't know, but yeah, I mean, whatever. It's a weird quirk of the rules.
Yep.
But, and it's I think it's unavoidable. But yeah, what after you perform your blue one forward, you may take a focus token, and that is it.
All right, so that's how that works. Jonathan, you want to go over mines?
Sure. Let's see. So
I think the biggest misconception is people are at, let's say, all right, bombs and mines are dropped in the system phase now. With mines, I think there's a lot of confusion if people say, when does it overlap? And like, if you drop a mine in the system phase, it does it detonate as soon as it overlaps? Or do they have to actually move through it?
So with a, yeah, so if you drop like a ConnerNet or a proximity mine, it should detonate immediately when you drop it. Because even if you, I think it says so right in the rules reference. I know that some people are saying, in the rules reference, it specifically says if it's overlapping two or more ships.
Yeah, I have that up right here. It says if a device that detonates when overlapped is placed under more than one ship's base, it detonates instantly, and the player placing the device chooses which ship to activate.
Yeah, overlapping. People were arguing since it doesn't specify what happens when one ship overlaps it, nothing happens, which...
Yeah, come on, people. Like, this is an example of like what to do in a case there are two ships, not like the period end. Like, this is the only case this works ever, and nothing else outside of this doesn't work.
Right. Yeah, so a ConnerNet or a Proxmine, they should detonate immediately.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, if you're trying to bend the rules there, you're bending it to your favor because you don't want to see mines and you think they are too oppressive, or you know, but. At the same time, everything, as soon as you enter that match, everything is open information. It's not like they're hiding that they have mines, and you should be flying your ships to know that they have the possibility of dropping them on you. And that's when we're going to go into raked cargo chutes. I'll take this one because I've been flying them, and right now in the rules reference, when you drop a raked cargo chute, you drop a debris cloud, and as an action, this is not in the system phase. So when you drop a rigged cargo chute, what is different from first edition and second edition is when you drop it onto someone, they do not suffer the effects. There is nothing in there that says they do suffer the effects as soon as you drop it. And then I know people are arguing, oh, well, it's unlisted on the devices and everything like that, but it's under the devices. It clearly says that this is a debris obstacle. It is not a device specifically. It is not a mine or anything like that. And then if you go under obstacles, you can see that the only time that you actually suffer the effects of the obstacle is when you move through it. Now, here's my counterpoints. I know everyone's like, oh, it's for the best, it's for everything like that. It is 1 point less than a ConnerNet. I believe ConnerNets are 5 points, right?
Are they six?
Let me check.
Okay.
At the same time, everything is open information. You know that I have these... ConnerNets on my, or not ConnerNets, I'm sorry, the rigged cargo chute on my ship. You should, okay, so it's 2 points less, but you know that they are on my ship, and if you position yourself in such a way that you know I'm going to be able to maneuver and drop these on you, that should be the punishment itself. They aren't guaranteed damage. It is an automatic stress if you've moved through it, but at the same time, I think that I wouldn't be surprised if it reverts back to the 1.0 that you do suffer the effects when dropping on it.
I mean, I actually looked at the 1.0 rules reference and looked at compared to the second edition rules reference, and they add that a very specific section of, while a ship is at range zero of an obstacle, it may suffer different effects. And it has a subsection on asteroids, but there's actually no, there's nothing specific about debris.
I don't think it says it in the rules reference, but the card that comes with it in the Shadowcaster, it does say that you suffer the effects when you do get hit by it.
I mean, in first edition, they didn't have this line, but in second edition, right, it says, while a ship is at range zero of an obstacle, it may suffer different effects. It says asteroid, the ship cannot perform attacks, and there's nothing for debris.
Right.
So if you're sort of magically under at range zero of a debris, you know, you don't get any specific penalties for being at range zero of debris. Separately, it lists attacks being obstructed. And when it talks specifically about being affected by obstacles, it says while a ship executes a maneuver, and then it goes through the, you know, if it moves through or overlaps an obstacle while executing this maneuver, it gets these effects. And then it says, while a ship is moving, but not executing a maneuver, it gets these effects. And it lists those separately. And then it says, while it's at range zero, this is what happens. So it covers if you're moving through debris, if you do a maneuver through debris, if you barrel roll somehow onto, or if you're tractored onto debris, or if you're just sitting still and end up on debris. So it covers all three and lists very specifically what happens.
Okay. So I get that. No matter what, right now in the game, you cannot suffer the effects if a rigged cargo chute is dropped on you. It's pretty clear cut and dry at that. Now, I know we had this conversation yesterday about if it does end up being like that, that's going to go back to action bombs of first 1.0 and with like K-Wing slamming and then dropping a bomb. But at the same time, don't you think that could potentially be there now with K-Wings at higher PS? Where I'm seeing here as a lower PS, it's like almost as a defense. As a higher PS, you could have Miranda or someone else flying and slamming and being like, okay, I know the slam's going to end up right here, so that when the next system phase happens, they've already moved and everything like that. I can now drop a Connor net or a proximity mine or something like that, and it's automatically going to go off. I would just say that the rigged cargo chute might offer a little bit of defense if it did hit for lower PSs.
To be fair to Miranda, it's probably more likely to be playing against Boba Fett and having him land a Connor net on your poor defenseless wedge.
Right. Yeah, I mean...
I don't know, man. If you want to waste a turn setting that up, like, as opposed to doing something, you know, firing barrage rockets with your K-Wing or whatever, like, if you want to do that, fine. I don't think it's... I think that kind of preserves the spirit of, like, what the K-Wing is supposed to do without making it, like, super... broken. I don't know. That doesn't feel abusive to me in the way that, like, advanced slamming a bomb right in someone's face and then having it, like, destroy them immediately was abusive.
I mean, I think if they ruled the rigged cargo chute to be the same way as 1.0, it wouldn't be too bad since the jump master is different, because it was particularly bad on the jump master.
Yeah.
Being able to white sloop and then poop that.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
You know, to white sloop it and then dump it right on you.
I have a question. For me, I know in 1.0, it was like, okay, well, if it's dropped on you, you gain a stress. Okay, well, I was about to do a red maneuver. So FFG, I don't know if this was the reason they had to do it or it kind of just worked, but at some point, FFG broke their game, right, and added something that could potentially give you stress before you move. And then if you did a red maneuver, it's like, oh, shit. And so they had to change it to, like, you just do a 2-forward, right?
Yep.
Yeah, that was rigged cargo.
Yeah.
Okay. So my guess is they absolutely wanted to get away from the idea of if you're stressed and you are, like, if you're doing a red, you get stressed, you do a 2-forward. I think that is the entire reason they got rid of it there. It's because that should have never happened in the first place. It was an oversight in 1.0. So they wanted to change it. And I think really, honestly, and is it, I don't even know if it's there for 2.0.
Yeah, I believe that provision is still in there.
Reserve 2-forward for, you know, accidentally doing a red maneuver when you have a stress for that situation. At that point, it's like, go back to the old system, which is, oh, I fucked up. All right, I'm going to 3-hard you off the board, and that's it.
That always felt super nasty, though.
Yeah, I absolutely see what you're saying, but like I said, at the same time, everything is open information. You know I had that red cargo chute coming. As the same point as I know that you have that Connor net there. So it's kind of like, maybe that's your chance to peel off and go do something else if you want. But I like I said, I think it's everything's open information. If it was a game where you don't have to reveal the card until you actually see it, then it would be a different state. But
which would be a fantastic game mode.
Oh, I would absolutely like to play that. Cause like
I understand what you mean, Andrew. And in that case, yeah, like it seems that way. The only other argument I would put up that's very, I'm grasping at straws, is fluff. What I mean by fluff is, with a smaller ship going through a debris cloud, it's much more likely that like it's going to have to swerve through that. It's smaller, the debris is larger. So the odds are it's going to go through that debris anyways and get a stress, just maybe not when you want it to. Whereas if you do it to a larger ship, they may be larger than that like debris cloud, so it's not as imposing for them. It's like, meh, you know, it's like my front is already over it, so I'm just going to keep going.
No, that definitely makes sense.
That's just my way of trying to defend this decision to do that.
Yeah,
I don't know. I think maybe like because you can only use recovery cargo chute once, right? There's only one charge.
Yeah, so there's only one charge.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they're just worried about it being abusive in some way. You know, where they chain like your stress. Now you have to do a 2-forward onto a rock, and then you know, I don't know. And the fact that it's like, oh, and I also have this ion bomb. Or this, what's it? The
seismic bomb,
the seismic charge, and now I'm going to blow up that rock that you had to 2-forward onto. Or you could, I guess, you could just blow up the debris as well. I don't know. There must be some reason.
Yeah,
I think it was abusive in 1.0 with the you know, intel agent contracted scouts.
Yeah.
Oh sure. Yeah.
But in 2.0, if they change the ruling, I don't think it'd be horrible.
All right. Well, we'll say for right now, it absolutely, if it gets dropped on you, it will not cause the effects of it immediately. You would actually have to put your template anywhere on the actual debris cloud to suffer the effects.
You have to move through it.
Yeah. So if he drops it on you and your front nubs are completely clear of it, then you are fine. You don't have to worry about it. And then, just, it's another obstacle on the board.
Yeah.
How much? Can I ask one question? How much are seismic charges?
Five.
A whopping 3 points.
Okay, so they three.
They are so cheap.
Okay, so rig cargo chute is 4, and then the seismic charge to get that combo would be 7 points.
So yeah, I see what you're saying.
It's like abusively cheap. Yeah.
Actually, I was going to defend it and say, or you could go a Connor net. Get ion, which is essentially going to make them do the 4-4, like or like control them and do a damage. Does that feel like, you know, it's like Connernet at that point too cheap, or like are they around the same?
Well, that's the other thing was like, I was thinking like with a whopping like with 4 points, like it's not that far behind what a Connernet is, because if a Connernet's 6 points, then it's kind of like you are getting that control from the ion that you have to do the 1-forward and you're taking damage. With 4 points, you're then taking a stress, which you, like I said, is open information. You should know about it coming, unless you forget about it.
Sure. So I think I'm just trying to look at like the balance of that. So like 6 points, you get a, you know, if it hits it, we'll just say either in any of these scenarios, it's a hit. So you throw the ion, the net down. Boom, you get a hit. Boom, you get an ion. You control them where they're going to go. They don't do the ion this round because the dial's already set. So you have to kind of play around with that. But you know, for 6 points, you're getting you're getting a turn of knowing where they're going to be and a damage. If you look at for 4 points, a debris cloud, you drop it. There's a minimal chance of doing a damage. And we'll just say like 50%, I'm pulling the number out of my ass, chance of stressing them next round, which is almost the same as the Ion, where it's like, yeah, like in a way.
And, so, and again, that's even if they dialed in a red maneuver, they might have, you know, saw it coming in and
but did even, like with the stress, like you've pared down their dial a little bit. But then you add for another 3 points the ability to then blow up that debris cloud to get a guaranteed damage on that guy, then does giving them a stress as soon as that drop, and then they maybe run over it again, and then you blow it up, like, is so, that fair?
Here's the one thing. One of the things that I did notice about that was, all right, you drop them at separate phases, so if you drop the seismic charge in the device phase, then you technically have to move or somehow be coordinated to drop that debris cloud. Now, the debris cloud's pretty big because you're it's coming basically right one straight out the back. So if you're doing that, then you're also putting your own ship at risk. It's almost like a genius effect.
I get you.
So there is that to think about, too.
I just think the idea of, like, dropping it, you get a stress, then you're going to move, you're going to get a stress, and Lord help you if you did a red maneuver while you're stressed and then getting another stress. Like, at that point, holy shit, like, that is a devastating card for 4 points.
Right. Yeah, a rigged cargo chute is very good.
Like, you could have, like, that. Like,
if you have that is, like, what it's for, I think.
And, I mean, and, like, yes, it can do damage immediately, but if you have a list that involves, like, trick shot or, you know, like, dash or stuff, just having more obstacles on the board might be better for you.
Yeah.
Rather, and it's not just about, like, doing immediate damage. Not to, like, go back to 1.0, but, like, there were lists, like, triple jumps all with rigged cargo chutes and trick shots, immediately dumping the rigged cargo chutes to just clutter up the center of the board.
I didn't even think about that with dash. If it did do the same effect, it would be the only way to actually damage dash through an obstacle.
Yeah.
I mean, what I mean by it being good is that it's abusable. It's, like, highly abusable in all those situations you described. Like, it is a very cheap card that can be slotted into, like, a lot of different list archetypes.
Right. Well, let's move on. We've talked enough about it. Right now, if you drop it on someone, it has no effect until they actually do any kind of movement. And don't forget, you can be tractor beam onto stuff like that. Right. Don't forget about that if you ever see that come across. Linked actions. You can link actions off of abilities that trigger outside the perform action step, such as coordinate or something along those other lines, like Sabine. I know, Marshall, you were messing around with that.
This is a read the rules reference thing. It's in there under linked actions.
Advanced sensors. Advanced sensors, it says you can perform one action only. You cannot perform more than one action, so you cannot link actions off of that during your activation. So you could still use advanced, or let's say you get coordinated, you can do something, and then you could advanced sensors another action, or vice versa, advanced sensors then get coordinated later. But during your activation, you can only perform one action. A couple of things that some other people brought up to us. Reinforce works a little bit differently. It only adds a evade result if there is more than one damage coming through in the compare results step. Pretty straightforward. So if there's only one damage, zero green dice, and an evade or and a reinforce, that one damage is going through. The other thing about reinforce is if the opponent or if the attacker is flanking, meaning they are in that middle, like that 180 degree arc basically on that ship, the reinforce will do nothing. It used to be if it was in the front, it would count as the front. Or if you were in arc at all, it would count as the front. And now it does not. You're considered flanking. TIE Defender ship ability. What's this?
Oh, so this was a question that came up about if you can 4K your defender over an obstacle and still get the evade token.
All right.
And I'm double checking the rules reference right now to find the exact definition of fully executing.
I'm pretty sure you do. I think I've heard this other places, but if you hit a rock or something like that, you skip your action step, which I don't think is the same as performing your evade action.
Well, it's that thing of what is after you fully execute a maneuver. Is that your perform action step? And the more I think about it, the more I'm not 100% sure. So I think it's something that
something we'll look into.
It might be something that's obvious. I think maybe I need clarification on it.
I remember looking this up earlier, and I'm pretty sure it says if as long as you don't bump, fully
executing a maneuver has nothing to do with the obstacles.
Right, yes, it's only other ships.
You can run over as many obstacles as you want. You still fully execute it.
Now, if you were to roll over a debris, though, you do get that stress immediately because it is a game effect.
So in that case, you would not be able to.
Correct. Game effects such as that do happen immediately. It's not like when that ability cue comes up, you can't like boost Link to a focus action and then focus action into another boost with like an A-Wing. As soon as you see that difficulty of a red action, you get that stress immediately. That is a game effect that you can't get around.
Yeah, so that defender, the full throttle defender ability is better than the X7 ability.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like slightly unnerfed. Yeah, I think, yeah, you can, I feel like you can hit a rock and I'd do it. It's just, it's my confusion about whether or not that takes place in the perform action step. Okay. And I guess it doesn't.
So, range bonus for Oiken at range zero. Yes, you do get the extra dice at range zero. It is in there as zero to one.
Range bonus for Oiken and Arvel.
Yes. So you do get that bonus dice at range zero because you can be touching and still attack with these people. Yeah. Suffering damage versus being damaged. Suffering damage is when you actually are hit by an attack, and being damaged means you have damage cards on your ship card. Is that
It's when you have no shields and you've been dealt at least one damage card. Right. I think that when it came up, I think it came up with Minister Tua. So she reads, pardon me while I...
You're going to reinforce if you're damaged?
Yeah, I can't remember if it's no shields or if you're damaged. Yeah, it's if you're damaged. So in order for Minister Tua to trigger, you have to have a damage card.
Great.
It's not like Asana Sard where you just have no shields. You have to have a card.
Han Solo, the Rebel Gunner card, it does, even though it doesn't say it on the card, it does count as a bonus attack. With that also being said, any card that makes you attack twice is counted as a bonus attack. If it doesn't say bonus attack on there, it should be treated as a bonus attack.
So, which is super confusing.
Right. You can't perform more than two attacks in a round per ship. We'll say that.
Mm-hmm.
Iden does not cancel ion or tractor tokens or jam tokens.
Big fan of that.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, so she can cancel the damage from the ion, but she can't stop the ion tokens.
Right. So like with an ion cannon, the first one is the damage, and then every dice result after that is ion tokens. Failed red actions now give stress. That was something that came out today, I believe.
Mm-hmm. That's a brand new thing we all have to deal with now.
Yep. And not only that, if you fail, like let's say you fail an action, boost action, you try to boost, can't do it, and then for some other reason, let's say you get coordinated and you want to with an interceptor, and then you do the barrel roll and then want to try to boost, you can't do that anymore because you already did your boost action and you failed it.
Yeah, I guess generally, so I guess the larger implication of that is if you fail an action, you don't get the effect of it, but it otherwise counts as you having done it for all intents and purposes.
Right.
Which is interesting.
Almost like you completed it and didn't complete it all at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's you exist in a state of contradiction.
Like, it's a bit like Schrodinger's cat.
Yeah, it's Schrodinger's target lock.
All right, anything about rules before we move on?
I think those were all the weird ones. Okay. All right, those were at least the ones that over the past week people have been shouting at me for answers. And I've been doing the best I can, but this fact that they dropped today seems to have cleared a lot of those up. And the other ones, I think it's usually just an issue of what does the card say? What does the rules reference say? Make sure you're looking at the right entry.
We've gone over everything pretty thoroughly. We've read the rules reference guide. I'm still learning a lot, too. I mean,
I don't know everything.
So if we got something wrong and you're raging out right now, sorry. Send us an email at feedback@backthedials.com and we'll get back to you soon.
post on our Facebook page.
Yeah, absolutely. Post on the Facebook page and we will either correct it or we will talk about it further. the whole Cavil and thing, I understand there's two sides to the story, and if you have a problem with it and you plan on flying Cavil, or you know someone that is your opponent, check with your TO first, because that could really be ruled either way.
I'm sure Brian will decide on a ruling before the state champion.
So are people really that upset about three attack dice?
No,
range one to two.
You can get four at range one, but I
yeah.
How would you get four at range one?
Because you get the range bonus. Range
oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
So
there's a vigorous discussion on the Facebook page.
Like I said, I would just check with your TOs, and what your TO says is final say. Don't argue with them. Just go with it. There's nothing you can do about it. The game's about having fun. If that one dice makes you lose the game, play another day.
Get it out, Rob. It should not be an issue, really. It's a Y-wing for one, so it has one agility. It's what, 8 damage to, or like, you know, like shields and hull together. It's 8. Just kill it. Like, it's not that hard.
There you go. Yeah, it's not Nora. You should be able to kill it in 3 or 4 shots.
Kill
the odds of it. It
should not be getting to range one of you.
And if it does, like, it most likely, you know, in most situations, it's going to have to spend an action to move that turret to shoot you in the first place, which means it's probably unmodded or close to unmodded. It shouldn't be an issue.
Right, it's like, why would you even have that turret facing forward anyway? Like, I would want that on the side arc. Yeah,
I really want that double tap, I guess.
I mean, I doubt we'll see a single Cavil at the group championship.
No. I'm flying Cavil now.
You have to.
All right, so let's move on. We have a new segment we want to try to do each episode, the meta-analysis. Two big things that I'm sure everyone's been hearing about is swarms and bombers, TIE bombers. Jonathan, do you want to go over swarms a little bit and why they're good and what you would do with them?
Well, TIE swarms. I think, so when second edition was announced immediate and we heard all that info about like flying being important, arc smattering, immediately people thought, okay, TIE swarms are going to be great again. And I agree, TIE swarms can be really, really good. But I think a lot of the talk of that came out sort of before we got pricing information on how much, say, bombers and punishers cost. But we'll talk about bombers and punishers later. But I think the TIE Swarm is extremely efficient, you know, with Howlrunner modifying all the shots on a TIE Swarm, they can put out a lot of damage. And with Iden protecting Howlrunner, and, you know, Iden is definitely an auto-include, it gives the TIE Swarm a lot more survivability, you know. Basically, you know, a TIE Swarm starts out really strong, and as soon as it starts losing ships, it can sort of go downhill rapidly. But being able to save a single TIE fighter for an extra round or two makes a big, big difference. So I think they could be really strong. I just think that they are challenging to fly, and although we talk a lot about them, I'm not sure how many we'll actually see on the table.
Right. I think the TIE Swarm is something that is a very high floor, high ceiling, you know, list. It's gonna be very hard to fly, and I've flown swarms before, and it's stressing. Like, to be able to sit there and have to like think about every single one of your maneuvers, it's very stressing on the mind. Like, especially when you have something that like auto damage, like bombs coming in and everything like that. It's something that you're not just gonna be able to easily pair up against another opponent, and with that opponent seeing the TIE swarm across them, I doubt they're just going to fly right into it. They should know that the math is not in their favor. So you don't want to necessarily joust it. So you're still going to want to have to learn how to maneuver them and everything like that. And understand that you're going to need to break formation sometimes and possibly lose one or two. But at the same time, it is probably one of the best jousters in the game at the moment. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think for jousting efficiency, it's hard to beat. Although, you know, I wonder if you run the numbers compared to some of these ordnance lists. I don't know how exactly it compares.
Yeah,
gut feeling, I think any variation of the bomber plus attack modifier 5-ship list gives a TIE Swarm a run for its money. But I don't know. I think with Iden, it becomes like miles better.
Yeah.
Just because Iden is so powerful.
I mean, do your homework, though. I mean, put a Tie Swarm on the table, and it's probably not as easy as you think it is.
So, like, no, it's not. And a lot of people are going to find that out the hard way.
Not to, like, Andrew Pattison in the UK, he had a really good guest post on Phil GC's blog. It's the X-Wing Hipster blog about Tie Swarms and about rock placement and what he would suggest. And he won, not... like the Yavin system opened 2 years ago with the Pataswarm back in the triple jump days.
Okay.
Yeah.
So basically, like, you want to make sure, you want to just put all the rocks out of the way as best you can. And he talked about arraying them in an L shape where they're sort of out of your way so that you have plenty of space to bank in. No, I think the swarm could be really good, but I just think that once you get past... like, 4 ships, 5 ships aren't too hard to fly, even 6, but once you get to 7, 6 and 7, it gets a lot harder to fly that many ships.
Yeah.
And when they have to be in a box really tight with, not because you depend not just on HAL Runner's ability, but Iden's ability. Because if a TIE fighter sort of strays out of Iden's protective bubble, you know, like, if you're outside of HAL Runner's range 1 bubble, it's not a big deal. But if someone is vulnerable outside of Iden's bubble, that's also a problem.
Yeah.
So and you have two sort of overlapping bubbles that you have to maintain, and you become very vulnerable to being blocked.
What's the timing? I don't know why I can never remember this. The timing on Iden is, it's neutralized results, right?
Yes, you already know how much damage is
coming. So you know, okay, yeah. God, that's so good.
It's really, really
it's
good.
So good.
I really thought she'd be a couple more points, that Howl and Iden would both be like 45 points, and then... so you couldn't put them both in.
Yeah, it's before you suffered damage. Okay. Yeah, I mean, she adds another ship to your list.
Yeah.
It is, instead of losing a ship, you just don't lose a ship. It's so good.
All right, so the next, we're pitting this up against the Barrage Bomber Swarm. It's basically 5 bombers, all with barrage rockets, 4 scimitars, and Captain Jonas. I know there's different variants of this. I think a lot of people are either putting a shuttle in this or just putting the 5 bombers. With just the ordnance and these bombers, you have 22 points left over. So you do have a little bit of wiggle room to put different things on them with, let's say, bombs or whatever else you want. If you want to put an EPT on Jonas to do that, you can. What makes this so strong is if you can fly this in formation, and you have your focus tokens and everything into your attack, you're doing approximately 6 to 8 damage on a 3 agility ship and close to 10 damage on a 1 agility ship, which is basically vaporizing anything on the board, like completely off the table in that first volley. It's powerful. It does a lot of damage really quick. And the bombers have 6 health by themselves. So I think they can survive that first couple shots because, granted, they don't have shields, but at the same time, with that 6 hull, they can save that focus token for their attack. Now, the bomber, Captain Jonas, gives anyone 0-1 that is firing ordnance. He can reroll 2 of the attack dice, and the barrage rockets can, if you have it in the bullseye arc, I think you can spend a charge to reroll a dice or all the dice. I don't remember off the top of my head.
You can spend as many charges as you want.
Okay, to reroll. Right. So with all that being said, if you can get that perfect shot off, you're doing a lot of damage really, really quick.
Yeah.
So, okay, we have these two lists. They're both heavy jouster lists. What would you rather take to the table? Like, if you were, let's say, rolling into the group championship in 2 weeks, what would you rather be taking? Rob, what do you think?
I don't really play Imperial, so... so, like, for me...
the answer is Boba Fett.
Yeah, Boba Fett.
I'll take Boba Fett and a bomber.
I don't...
You run Boba Fett into those bombers, you're going to get a lot of rerolls.
Okay, so let me ask you. Let me ask the opposite. Let me ask you the opposite then. What would you rather not see you go up against?
Okay, probably the bombers.
Right.
I feel like there's a lot of them, right? So if I can get right up in there, with I'm talking with Boba, you're gonna get a lot of rerolls, but you're not. I don't like. It's gonna be hard to pop something round one, right? So you're not. I feel like you're not gonna. Most likely you're not going to kill something, and if you do, it's going to take at least 2 ships. You know, so if you don't, then that's still another ship that gets a fire at you again next round potentially, and that you have to avoid and set up a shot that, you know, is going to work for you. So yeah, I'd much rather see TIE fighters that, you know, I can take out a lot easier, in my opinion.
You can probably try to bump them and then get your
rerolls. You just shoot up there, bump one or two of them if it's an open engagement, depending on how it was deployed, and then, you know, and then you get like infinite rerolls from a TIE swarm. Yeah. You know,
so what's your Boba list? Do you have a blocker in there? Do you have something you can just like run into the TIE swarm and mess it up?
No, that would be Boba himself. So the idea with like Boba is, and I had mentioned this with, I think it was Andrew yesterday, is with Boba, you want the rerolls, right? So you want to be at range one, but you don't want everything to be able to shoot at you at range one. So when I was playing Jonathan yesterday with his three X-Wings and an A-Wing, he potentially could have shot at Boba four times with, you know, three of them being X-Wings, and I think two of them were at range one, and then an A-Wing as well. So if I can deny at least one shot and still get all those rerolls, that's better. So I will always run him in there, and in most cases I'll probably lose my action, but with rerolls, you know, depending on what you're taking for your talent, if you have like Han, if you're bringing Marauder title with Han or something, then you get, you can do a red focus. If you're bringing 000, you can maybe get a calculate. So there are plenty of ways that you can still get some kind of, you know, good green vibes going on, even if you, you know, crash into them on purpose. I completely derailed this entire thing.
Right. Apologies. Okay. So let's get back on track. All right, Jonathan, would you take the TIE swarm or the barrage bomb swarm?
I mean, I think it might depend on the TIE swarm too, because there's a lot of variance.
Yeah.
So I mean, so if you're flying four scimitars and Jonas, they don't have to be in a tight box. I mean, so. There was an article on the on formation flying. I think Doug Kinney was it. Maybe it was Doug Kinney's article on and they showed like tight boxes and loose formations, and you could fly a loose formation if you only have five ships. You know, so you know Jonas could be like you could deploy Jonas all the way at the board edge, and then you could put the bombers, space them out a bit so that in the front row, like at range one from the board edge. And that you could keep the side ones within range one of Jonas. So they don't have to be quite so tight. And it makes it much harder to block them. You know, you could block each bomber individually with an academy, but it's hard. And if you're really lucky, one academy could block two bombers. But the way you can sort of space the bombers makes them harder to block. So I feel like, and then those scimitars shoot at I2, and they could totally take off Howrunner off the board before those Initiative 1 academies fire. So I feel like a traditional swarm, I mean a Howrunner, Iden, 5 academy swarm, if they meeting up against this list, there's a very high chance of how, like Iden and Howrunner are not going to take Jonas off the board in the first round, but they're not going to do enough damage. And there's a very high chance of like four of the bombers come shooting back, taking Howrunner off the board, even with Iden, and then doing a lot of damage to someone else, maybe taking another TIE fighter. And then all the TIE fighters shooting back may not take a bomber off. So for a Howl, Iden, 5 Academy list, I would take the bombers over that. I think a higher PS named TIE fighter swarm, like Inferno, Howl, and Wampa, even though it's at 200 points, it may not be as good against other TIE swarms. Since most of the ships shoot at I-5 or 4, they could take a TIE bomb. They could take Jonas off before the scimitar shoot. So I would consider taking a 6 TIE named swarm, but I don't. But if it's the Howl, Iden, 5 academies, I think I would take the bombers.
I'm a fan of ordnance in general, so I'd probably sold on the bombers.
Yeah, same. It's fewer ships. They shoot before the TIE fighters, and you don't have to fly them in formation if you do Jendin.
Yeah. Even let's say you're taking the bombers and you go up against something like an ace heavy list, I think they still are strong enough that they can. If you load these guys up with proton bombs and you go up against a art dodgy ace list, you could probably still manage to take off a couple of them without having to worry about them getting behind you. So, I guess
it makes it a much more difficult puzzle for them to solve.
All right, so I guess votes in. Barrage Bomber Swarm wins.
I think it might be Bombers. I don't know.
Yeah.
All
right. So let us know how you like that segment. Well, each week or each time we record, we will try to do a meta-analysis of picking two different lists that we hear about winning stuff, and we'll see if we can pit it up against a different list and see which one we like better. Both of them are probably still very good, and I would, if you can fly a swarm and you like flying a swarm, the TIE swarm, I would absolutely do it. It's probably a very good meta call at the moment. All right, so you have a newbie tip for us this week, Marshall?
I do, and I think it's something. It's another one that took me a couple months of playing X-Wing to figure out, and I think it's especially relevant in the second edition now that upgrades are they vary wildly in cost. And that newbie tip is when you're list building, to not feel like you have to fill every upgrade slot. And the reason, there are a couple reasons for that. The first of which is if you're new, you are probably not going to have like a great sense of how everything in the game fits together. So you're going to forget stuff. And I think if it's like early in your X-Wing career, I think it's going to be better for you to learn just like how ships move around on the table and how to focus fire things and how to fly in formation, if that's the kind of thing that your list does, as opposed to filling your ships up with a bunch of complicated cards that work together in weird ways that you're going to constantly be forgetting or messing up or like looking up how they worked. And it's like, I feel like it's too much to worry about. So I think especially since upgrade cards are a lot more expensive comparatively, instead of dumping a bunch of upgrades on your ships, just like maybe just take an extra ship and only use like one or two upgrades that are really crucial to your squad. Like if you're flying Whisper, like put Juke on Whisper and like maybe that's it. Or like if you're flying Vader, put like Supernatural and Fire Control on Vader and maybe that's it. Don't feel like you have to load up on all the shiny new toys just because you have those slots available.
Yeah, I know yesterday me and Rob's game, we were just sitting there like, wait a second, what does this card do? And like we'd have to sit there and read the card and be like, okay, now I remember. So
Yeah, I was even doing that with Jonathan. It's just like what Marshall is saying is not only true for newbies, but I think for 2.0 in general, like these cards some of them may have the same names, but they do completely different things, or they change the way they've done them, or the wording is slightly different that makes it, you know, oh, now you do it here in this phase instead of there. So, yeah, so even for us who are, I guess, more veteran and, you know, used to know these cards by heart, you know, where it's like, oh, I got this, this, and this on my ship. Oh, yeah, of course, I know exactly what you're doing. I think a lot of us are back to square one, and to even like throw to the point where Marshall said, like, don't load up your ships with everything. I had the first game I played with 2.0, I did exactly that. And I think it was more because you have 200 points now to play with, so it feels like it goes further, and you're like, oh my god, like, I still have this many points. I'll just throw this on, and I'll throw that on. And then you play your game, and you're like, this never, ever, ever came up. Not even close to, like, a situation where I could have used this thing. Right. So yeah, it's definitely a thing.
So just load your list up with a lot of ships and get the feel of the game first before you start forgetting what you spend all these points on.
Yeah. Just start out trying to fly better. Yeah. You know, learn all that, and then slowly learn the cards from what they're playing, and then the few that you put on, and then slowly build up, I suppose.
All right. So now for everyone's favorite segment, Rob rages out about Rob gives constructive criticism.
Yeah, feedback on the X-Wing app.
All right,
I don't think we could have ended this episode without talking about the app. I know there are plenty of people that have talked about the app. I will agree with most of those people. It is not the best, especially when you compare it to stuff that we had in the past, that FFG and whatever company helped work on this had access to Steam, and kind of playing with those apps and decide what works and what doesn't. Me personally, I come from a background of, I did UX design for a couple of years, a long time ago now, it feels like. So I look at this, and immediately the first thing I see about this is this app was made by somebody, or at least designed by somebody, that does not play the game. That is the first thing that jumps out to me. I could be completely wrong, and I may be, I don't know. But to me, this app, and I am looking at it right now, and then I compare it to Launch Bay Next, which, if you guys are looking for a good app, honestly, and I'm sorry, FFG, but I'm going to recommend that before I recommend this, only because of ease of use. Now, I'm going to get into the X-Wing stuff. It's like, so this was designed not as an information app, in my mind. And what I mean by that is, like, if you go to your squad, like a save squad, I'm going to open my Boba Asajj list. I look at this, and I have none of this information to me helps. Like, if I was pulling this stuff from my shelf to put into my bag to take with me to a tournament, getting to this point where I've clicked, let's see, two times into this, and I got into my list, and I still have zero information. I know I'm playing Asajj and I'm playing Boba. Then I have to click again to run down Asajj, and then I have to scroll down to look at what the items I have on. Then I got to scroll down further, click on Boba, scroll down further to get this information that's all very visual and very nice looking, but this is supposed to be an information app. This is supposed to be something that you look at, you immediately see, and you put away. It is not meant to be colorful and pretty and have, like, everything there. Like, the app is much larger than it needs to be because it has all of the card art on it. It's nice. I like it. I do want it on there. But with these other apps that we had in 1.0 and now, it's not necessary to have. And I don't know if you guys agree with what I'm saying at all, but at the very least, this was not designed as an informational app. This was designed, it looks like the first website I made in high school, to be honest, when I was learning, HTML and stuff. It's not that pretty. The prettiest part about it is, like, when you drill down and you get to, like, FFG's icons for all the cards. Beyond that, it's not good. It's just, like, visually too thick and big, and just condense that information to exactly what I need, and that's it.
Yeah, I think that is my one outstanding problem with it, is that I can't just, like, look at my squad list and understand what it is. I have to click in to the ship, and then I have to click into the upgrade, and it's just a lot of clicking and a lot of layers, and I'm actually fine with the way it looks. It took me a minute to, like, wrap my head around it. And I think, I don't know, I have no aesthetic sense whatsoever, but I feel like if they could keep the same general, like, look of the app, but just have it display more information.
But I don't know if any of you are looking at it as I am, but there's this weird, like, you go into save squads or new squads, and it immediately pulls up this framed thing where, like, it says save squads, and then it's framed, right? Like, it like denses into this little, like, this, like, frame that's, like, beveled on the edges. Why is that? Why was that needed? Like, why you've just condensed and like shortened the amount of information that can fit on the screen further by putting this weird frame thing around it that doesn't need to be there. It's for aesthetics only, and it just taking away from the, like, usability of it. It's just too much. Get rid of it. Get rid of all these icons and big chunky things. That's not necessary.
Yeah. I think part of it is that I think we're used to looking at squad builders that have, like, the exact opposite design philosophy, like Aurora, where there's just no information, or there's no, like, I mean, there's all in, it's all information. There's no,
traffic.
There's no,
There's no flair, right? There's no
flair. Thank you. That's exactly the word I was looking for.
It's
just like a white background with like gray text on it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, that feels like a programmer made it, which is fine. You know, like it's just the information, you know, guy, whether I don't know, I'm, you know, again, sorry. I don't mean to offend, you know, like doesn't have an art background or anything. Just wanted to make an app for people to have on iOS. And thank God for him, because I used it all the time. but yeah, I think this app just doesn't, it doesn't have that sweet spot like of you know, information to graphical balance. It's very graphical at the detriment of the information. And what it's supposed to do, which is very quickly, you know, and efficiently get you, like, to me, what it's supposed to be is like, I'm putting a list together. Now I need to go and get stuff for it, you know. So I put the stuff in my bag and I go and I put it out. I open the app to make, you know, because maybe I have a couple lists. I click on that one. I instantly find the information to grab the correct cards. And if my opponent wants to see it and I don't want to throw him all the cards, I can throw it to him and he can very easily see it without having to touch my phone and scroll through the damn thing to get to the bottom, see all that. And then it's like, oh, what does this upgrade do? Oh, let me drill down, scroll down, drill down again until I click on Lazarazzi to see what she does. Like that to me is too much. It's too much.
Mm-hmm. All right. Anything else for the app before we close out?
Can I get my own like theme music for when it's Robert Rages out?
I'll tell you what, you know, we'll get some like John Cena. Bum, 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 bum.
I was kind of thinking more like, I kind of wanted to go more like banjo, like like some like ignorant guy, you know, like talking about like things that really don't matter at all. Like I wanted it to be this.
You can have whatever you want.
Whatever you need.
Yeah, I'll find it.
Find it and then we'll
upload it. I'll find Star Wars themed banjo music.
Nice.
Oh, I'm sure that exists.
I'm sure it does.
Yeah.
All right, so we got some events coming up that we have to talk about. We'll just go over, but this Sunday coming up, the September 23rd, we have the 2.0 boot camp at Showcase Comics. We start that at noon. So if you are looking to learn to play or if you want to practice some of your lists coming up for the group championship, come out. We'll have different lists for different levels of play so you can try whatever you want. Again, if you just want to come out and learn
I should put together a newbie list that's like not designed to stomp people.
Right. So yeah, just bring whatever you want. Like I said, if you are just coming out to learn to play, we'll walk you through it. We'll teach you how to play. We'll help you build lists and stuff. Or like I said, if you're trying to get practice for different tournaments or the championship coming up, bring those lists too, and we can help organize that.
So bring a mat if you have one. I think we're going to have the launch event kit.
Yeah, the launch kit.
I think we're doing that stuff out. Yeah.
And I heard it was free.
Yeah,
it is free. Yeah, it's free.
It is free.
It's all free.
The following weekend, we have just a casual tournament at Red Caps on September 29th. Again, that is starting at noon. I believe the entry for that will be $10. We're probably just going to do a 4-round event. It'll probably be like medium. Bring what you want, but you will be expected to know the rules and have all the supplies needed for a second edition event. Yeah. On
probably bring a mat for that one.
Yeah, you might need
them.
On October 6th is the SJ Philadelphia Championship. It will be October 6th, Top Deck Games. That is the big one. We're expecting a big turnout for that, and it will be
full. It just got bigger as well.
Yeah. So with second edition, you will be required to have all second edition stuff with you. We did get word just yesterday that the top two players will have PAX Unplugged passes, 3-day passes.
That's what I meant by bigger. That's
right. So, yeah.
Pretty cool. Yeah.
Brian is doing tremendous job getting prize support in for that. So there's going to be plenty of things to win, and you'll probably walk away with so much in your hands after that. So it'll be a fun time.
It'll all be 2.0 compatible.
All of it. Here's the other thing. I know we say it's the group championship and everything, but you'd be surprised how many people that are a little unfamiliar with the game or they're just starting out come out, and then you're going to end up playing 6 games throughout the day. So it is something that you really want to, like I said, if you're not that competitive or you just want to play a lot of X-Wing, come out still, because you're probably walking away with a lot of stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're probably still ending up going away with, yeah. some right. fun stuff.
And sometimes you have the most fun in the salt mines.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's true.
So next we have on October 27th, East Coast Gamers is having an X-Wing Halloween event. We'll link the event to our Facebook page, and you can check it out there. I wonder if you have to dress up in costumes and everything, but that'd be pretty cool. They always have great events out there. Again, Mike Bird always has so much prize support to give everyone, and it's always a blast. All right, any shout-outs before we close out?
I have a question real quick.
Okay.
Just there was a small comment about the 2.0 boot camp. Do we have any like newbies coming that we know of?
I have absolutely no idea. I know that Showcase has been advertising it like separately from the like the SJPA Facebook group, so there may be people like random people who like walk into Showcase and see that it's on the calendar, or like people who follow them on Facebook who like are play other games, or like just like the comic books that like may be seeing the event and might come out to like try to learn X-Wing.
Right.
Yeah.
But as far as I know, like everyone who's responded to the super secret private Facebook event that I created for the group, all those people I know and are like people who have been playing X-Wing forever. But I'm assuming that some
people. I do know we do have some new people that have literally picked up the game for second edition that have never played first edition. So it is a great event to try to come out and learn the game. We'll walk you through everything. And
yeah, the reason I brought it up was just because I get excited to try to help.
Yeah, I hope we get new people.
Like I would totally like. Yeah, I'm not gonna play. I just want to help the new people out. So that because the idea of like I'm sure there's like you guys are like this or hopefully like this, and there's other people. Maybe not everybody. I don't know. Depends on if you like teaching people or whatever. But I love this game, and I want everyone else to love this game. So if I can make this game, their first experience with it as good as possible to like, really like show them, wow, this is a good community and the game itself is good, because I'm learning it, like, and then they stay with it. That makes me very happy.
Yeah. The other thing is, let's say you're listening to this, you just started hearing about second edition coming out and you haven't decided to make a purchase or anything like that. Still come out where you have plenty of supplies to get you up and running so you can do a demo game or anything like that. If you would like change your mind, if you're on the fence about anything, still come out. I'm going to have extra lists with me so you can try the game and demo it. So definitely still come out for this.
Yeah. I mean, even if you just want to come ask questions, I've seen that before a lot of times where they just want to see it, ask questions about it. That's fun too.
Yeah. Just observe the game. Anything else, guys?
No, I got no shout outs.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm shoutless.
All right, well, I think that does it for this week's episode. I want to thank everyone for listening this week, and get out there and fly something.
Yeah, do it.
Do it.
All right, guys.
Do it.
See you.